listeners. You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen.
Good afternoon, people.
Now, we want you to snuggle up because we are going to be talking about frost today.
Yeah, frosty boy in the garden. And it was a frost this morning, actually. Did you check it out this morning?
Yes.
Did you get out of bed nice and early? Yeah, it was a bit crispy underfoot.
Mm.
So we're going to just go into a little bit more depth about what frost is exactly.
Mm.
And, you know, what you can do about it if you have a garden.
Yes.
So let's crack into it.
Okay.
Crack into it like the crackly frost. Okay, so what is frost? Well, it is simply defined as a thin layer of ice on a solid surface. That's what Wikipedia said.
Sounds right to me.
Does that sound right to you?
Yep.
Good. Great start. It is formed in an above-freezing atmosphere from water vapour. So, obviously, water vapour can only be about if it's not frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then when it comes into contact with a solid surface that is frozen or below frozen, that's when you start getting your frost.
Okay.
Okay, so it's a bit of a strange one. It's almost like you need above and below for it to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you notice ice forming on your car, that's kind of like it's been frosted.
Yes, yes. In temperate climates, that's like what New Zealand, well, the North Island is considered, or the top half of the South Island, or top third. Okay, so temperate climates, it usually appears on surfaces near the ground as little white crystals. But in cold climates, it actually occurs in a greater variety of forms, such as radiation frost, white frost, window frost, advection frost from cold winds, and black frost. So those are what you find. There's a lot more kinds.
Oh,
in
wow.
The,
yeah. I know.
I was like, I started looking into this and then I was like, okay, this is going to be a bit more study than I... Black frost, you've heard of that before.
Yeah.
Strictly speaking, is not frost at all, as it is referred to as the condition seen in crops when the humidity is too low for frost to form. Okay, so there's not enough water vapour in the air for it to form, but the temperature falls so low that the plant tissues freeze and die, becoming blackened, and that is where the term black frost came from.
I have seen that happen to some plants.
So it may not look like a beautiful white blanket of frost.
The leaves turn black.
But And you hear it a bit like around National Park. They'll say, oh, there's been a black frost if lots of cars have come off the road or trucks or whatever, because it's not overly visible to the eye.
No.
But then you've got a lot of damage as a result. So how does this affect our plants? Okay, so many plants can be damaged or killed by frost, and it varies with the type of plant, the type of plant tissue exposed, and how low temperatures get. Plants likely to be damaged even by a light frost include vines and the nightshades.
Okay, so like your tomatoes,
eggplants, peppers.
Potatoes.
And you'll notice that, like with, say, your capsicums, you pop them in the fridge, and if you put them even a little bit too close to the back of the fridge where the frozen part is,
mushy.
Yeah, they go black.
And black.
And mushy, yeah. So plants that may tolerate or even benefit from frost include root vegetables, leafy greens and brassicas.
Yeah, cabbages and collies and broccolis are quite resilient.
Yeah. I looked out at mine this morning and they're like booming, like not a problem, loving it.
And of course the root crops are in the ground, so they're not even like, they're nice and snug in the ground.
So what can we do to, you know, protect our plants from this? Okay, if you've got more delicate plants, you've got, you can use powerful blowers. This is what they use in horticulture, especially down south where the vineyards are and Blenheim around there.
Yeah.
And they'll use things like helicopters.
Yes.
I think they use that on the kiwi fruit as well.
I've heard on the tea plantations.
Yeah.
They will circle, well, if they can afford to, this helicopter to put the hot air down into the...
Yeah, no, it's apparently you know when it's cold, not just because you can't feel your toes, but if you live in an area like that, you can, the air is just filled with the sound of choppers, like, going about it. Because it's the farmers' livelihood.
Yeah.
So they that's a part of their budget, you know, for that time of the year. And this doing so prevents the formation of accumulations of cold air, which settle lower to the ground.
Yeah.
So to stop that air low to the ground getting too cold, they, yeah, I wonder if they use it to disperse the water vapour as well, maybe. Didn't say that.
Hmm.
You can wrap your trees and cover crops. They even use heating to slow down the lowering of temperature, but it's only practical for high-value crops grown over small areas. You wouldn't want to
heating as
blast heat a whole vineyard.
Hair dryers, no.
Yeah, or I guess you just put, yeah, like panel heaters or something like that.
That's
maybe around the place.
Kind of extreme.
Yeah, but I guess if you've got like a really expensive crop that's maybe grown in a glasshouse or something like that, you can contain or maybe just blow warm air over it or something. Another real popular thing they do is spray crops with a layer of water. Have you heard of this?
Yes, get your hose out before the frost comes.
Yeah.
Or
it's all to do with the latent heat of freezing. I'm bringing in my physical chemistry here.
Okay.
Do you know about latent heat?
No, can you explain?
They take advantage of this phenomena, okay, by lowering the latent, this lowers the latent heat of the plant tissue and thereby prevents harmful freezing of the tissues of the plant it coats. Latent heat is the heat energy required of a substance to turn it into ice. It's weird. You actually, it's the heat that is lost during the actual freezing process that actually keeps the plants from being damaged. It's an actual, quite a lot to get your head around. But when you freeze, say you take a glass of water, you freeze it into ice.
Yeah.
There's actually a certain amount of heat required in that water, or heat energy in those molecules to then form ice.
Okay. Is it like when you have your refrigerator and things are cold in the freezer, but on the back it's warm, like the back of the fridge?
I think that's more to do with, maybe.
And so that
I thought that was more to do with
coming from the freezing
condensation
action.
Condensation, I don't know.
Well,
anyway. Fill us in, listeners, if you can make it clearer than that. But that's the thing. Mm. For something to freeze, it requires any chemical reaction requires energy.
Gives off
heat. Yeah,
it
freezes. Certain amount. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a certain amount required for that to happen. So they've taken advantage of that. So the heat loss during the actual freezing process keeps the plants from being damaged. So But this measure needs to be applied with care. It's quite a common one in the, you know, horticultural sector.
Okay.
But you need to know what you're doing, because you don't want the plants to become overburdened with ice.
Oh.
You've got to put on just the right amount so that you get that heat released. But you don't want to put in too much so that the whole thing's dripping with icicles and then you've got your a black frost situation.
And when you say putting on the heat, how would you capture that heat?
Well, it's okay. I told you it was a tricky subject. The heat, so the water is, anyway, is creating a little bit of, so you've got a little bit of ice formation, but not too much.
Okay.
It's a fine line.
Yeah.
A little bit, enough to get that heat on the plant. Let's move on. Right, so how does the frost affect the plants? Okay, so many plants can be damaged or killed by frost, and it varies with the type of plant. Oh, sorry, I said that one already. Boop. Where? Lost my place. Oh, so we were up to that. We're going to move on from that one. Okay. So did you have any tips on what you can do to avoid garden damage in the next Jack Frost?
Oh, well,
other than getting a helicopter. And I'm not prepared to go spraying my plants I would probably be too heavy-handed and, overburden them with too much ice.
Well, what I would do is you can put frost cloth over your plants, and
yes,
that will give them a blanket. So any vulnerable plants you can cover, mm-hmm. and you can get that from any garden centre. Newspaper, wet newspaper, just around, yep. or as a mulch around the roots, or just wrap up your plants with straw or something.
Yep. Tarp.
Or
baskets.
Hessian. All these little cloches, you know what?
Yes.
The cloches.
Yeah.
Which you can make from frost cloth and hoops or whatever.
Or plastic bottles.
Plastic bottles.
Yeah.
You can move your plants, if they're in pots, into a warmer, sheltered area.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be a greenhouse or by the walls of your house, or and even bring them inside. So...
Yeah.
There are things you can do.
Definitely.
That don't require helicopters.
Yeah, or latent heat. Okay, so another thing you can do is scrutinise your soil. Apparently, your soil quality can really help in times of frost.
How so?
Okay, because if it can, the amount of moisture it holds... And it can affect the plant's ability to withstand cold weather. And the reason being is, so if you've got more water in your soil, there's more human air as a result of this surrounding the plants. And because of this, although this is a little bit confuses me a little bit, but the higher the dew point, the less likely the frost will form. The dew point is the temperature to which the air must be cooled in order to become saturated with water vapour.
Okay. What I do know is frost tends to descend to the lowest point of your garden.
Yeah.
So
that's location, yeah.
Yeah.
So deep, loose, heavy, fertile soil releases more moisture into the surrounding air than thin, sandy or nutrient-poor soil.
So if you have good drainage, does that help?
I guess
absorb
it's good.
The moisture.
You don't want it to drain too much, though. Heavily mulched plants are more likely to be frosted. Why so? Mulch prevents the moisture and heat in the soil from escaping and thereby warming the surrounding air.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of like your soil, if it can breathe.
It needs to breathe. Don't smother it.
Yeah, you're less likely to, have it. Light-coloured mulches such as hay have the additional disadvantage of reflecting sunlight and heat during the day, so you're better, if you are going to mulch, having a darker coloured mulch.
Oh, okay.
Another thing you can do is keep looking skyward. Okay. Clear and calm skies and a falling afternoon temperature are usually the perfect conditions for frost.
Yep, that's what my dad always is saying.
Yeah.
Oh, we're in for a frost because the skies are all clear.
If temperatures are cooling under clear but windy skies, especially when the wind is out of the southwest, it may indicate the approach of polar air and a hard freeze, so beware. That's when you need to start covering up things up or getting the heater out in the garden. If you see clouds in the sky, it's all good because the night will be overcast,
yes.
So it acts like a blanket.
Yeah.
And it'll be fine.
There's no hot water bottles for plants.
Ensure your plants are hydrated. I'm sure you touched on that, did you, just now, or was I dreaming that? But because obviously they can't drink ice.
Oh.
So... You want to try and keep that soil, just wet enough. If you know that frost is predicted, keep them hydrated.
Oh, no, actually, that wasn't...
Okay, I was dreaming that. And also cover the whole plant before sunset to trap any remaining heat.
Mm.
So that is about all I've got on frost, guys. Oh, and location. It's better not... Okay, the best place you can have a garden in the southern hemisphere is on a gentle north-facing slope that is well-heated by late afternoon sun but protected from blustery south winds.
Mm.
Okay? Not too high. the temperature drops about 6.5 degrees per 1,000 metres. So the higher you go, the higher the risk, but not too low. Because if your sort of garden's in a trough or something, the cold air sinks.
Yeah.
Lower.
That's what I've noticed with my garden.
Even in just your, because your garden always seems like a flat garden to me. The lower areas,
it's slightly sloping to the back.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's where I notice the plants get frosted down there.
Even on a really gentle slope like that's interesting.
So, those little slopes make a difference. If you're planning or designing a garden, you might want to put in shelter belt or a hedge initially to protect.
Yeah, they say that if you're got like lots of structures around you, whether it's buildings, fences, then there's less likely to be a frost.
Yeah. And
so a shelter belt's not only for wind,
but also the frost. And
yeah.
They say that with fences and things, don't put a solid fence up. Gaps so that the air can flow.
Oh, I don't know if I want to see my neighbours that badly. And also, if you live near a large body of water, apparently you're less susceptible to have frost.
Well, those on the coastal areas by the beach, they don't get frost.
Yeah, as long as if it's a lake, as long as it doesn't ice over. You know? But, yeah, I think ocean, I think they were meaning when they said that anyway.
I'm just going to touch on the hardiness of plants. As you were saying before, there are some plants that are resilient and some are not.
Yeah.
Well, the ones that are, they call it tender, mostly your seedlings, the ones that need most protecting, or your saplings of their trees. But if you look in any plant catalogue or any garden book, if you're looking up different plants, you'll notice that with their name and all the details about them, it will say whether they are hardy or non-hardy.
Yeah.
And also, they will say what zone it's best to plant them in. And the zones relate to the climate zones.
Mm.
So every, there are world maps where they've demarcated these different zones.
Mm.
So you'd have...
So they're all the same, like whether you're in North America or...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So,
I wondered that.
Yeah. So probably the most common zones... Well, they go from 0 to 10,
okay.
And 10 is like the hottest and 0 is the coldest.
Right.
For Auckland, well, where we are, I'd say we are in zone 9, so it's kind of subtropical.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That high up?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So any plants, if you look them up and you'll say, oh, they're in zone 1 or they're in zone 2, you can sort of gauge whether they will do well in your garden or if they're susceptible to frost if they're too high, like they're zone 10, they actually belong in the tropics.
Yeah, they need,
Yeah.
So they'd do probably really, really well in a conservatory or a steam room or something like that.
So I noticed, like, with some of the particular plants in my garden, like frangipani, does not do that well. Even though it's sheltered by the wall,
It
will turn brown when it gets cold and it doesn't really like it that much.
Okay.
So
apparently plants with maroon or bronze leaves do better. Because the leaves absorb and retain heat.
Mm.
And downy or hairy leaf plants do okay as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
So check out your
hardiness. And plants that are compact.
Zones when you're planting. Just check if you're doing any permanent planting. Things like annuals, of course, they are going to probably be a bit, well, you wouldn't plant them in the cold time anyway.
Mm.
Yeah, so just check that out.
If you plant your plants more closer together and more compact, they can protect each other.
Yeah.
As well, I've been told from that radiation, frost bite.
If you've got a lot of pots and things, you can just group them together and keep them.
Well,
keep the frost away.
I think it's time. I think that's covered all the. Unless you had anything else, but I think we're time wise, we better keep things moving. But shall we do plant of the week this week, Selena? You've got something.
Yep, let's.
Not so chilly? Or is it? Tell us all about it.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. He'd spent about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote,
so, our plant of the week is early chair. Do you know what early chair is?
No.
No.
No, I don't. But I'm... What is it?
Oh, it's... It is blooming at the moment. You might know it as daffodil or jonquil.
Oh, okay. So you're just being tricky.
Yeah, I was being tricky.
All right. So that's a plant that can help handle the chill, but it's so pretty and so...
Yeah.
It looks warm.
Yeah.
You know, it's inviting.
Okay,
what a lovely plant.
I've chosen early chair. It's a type of narcissus. So daffodils and jonquils and all those spring bulbs that have that lovely perfume are part of the narcissus family.
Oh, right. I thought you were, like, being funny and saying they're a narcissist. And I was thinking, oh, is that because they take over, like, fields or...
I'll tell you the story about Narcissus.
Yeah.
Why it's named Narcissus. The story goes that Narcissus was a beautiful youth who rejected the advances of Echo, who was a Greek goddess.
Mm-hmm.
And she pined away because of unrequited love.
Yeah.
And until only her voice was left. Now, the goddess Nemesis was not very happy with Narcissus. So she made him fall in love with his own reflection. And then he fell in and died.
Oh.
Which was tragic.
Okay.
So the flower sprung up where we fell in and died because he loved himself instead of Echo.
Right.
So that is where we get
What other plants are there in that family?
I'm
sorry to put you on the spot.
Daffodils and jonquils.
Okay.
So the daffodils are more of the yellow trumpet looking flowers, mm-hmm. and the jonquils are the little sort of pale yellow creamy flowers like little stars. So those are the ones that I'm seeing in my garden at the moment, mm-hmm. and they have lovely that fresh scent. Some people like
Well, you're lucky because some I wanted to get bulbs in my garden this year, and yes, daffodil bulbs. But then, because of the lockdown situation, I left it too late. I should have just joined the mass queues that went to Mitre 10 and just bought them out.
Well, what you're meant to do is plant them as soon as they come out in the garden centres, which is about January, February.
Yeah, and I left it too late.
You'll get them coming up right now.
Oh, well done for being organised. I bet it's a wonderful addition to the garden.
So, where I've got mine is under some deciduous trees,
mm-hmm.
so they like that. Some people plant them in the lawns, but that's not such a good idea because you can't actually mow. There's not a good idea to mow them because when they die down, they need to keep their leaves for as food for their bulbs next year.
Yeah.
So they should just die down naturally and then they'll
dry
off.
Have you seen people grow them in their lawns?
Not really. I think that's more of an English type thing to do.
I've seen them grow in the middle of lawns, like in a...
But spring bulbs are best really under deciduous trees.
Okay.
When the leaves fall and then they get the sunlight and then the leaves come back and then...
And then it's a nice way because, you know, you've got the deciduous tree there and then you've got pop a colour underneath it because it kind of brightens up the whole scene. It looks quite nice. Yeah.
And plant as many as you can because they look really good in big, huge drifts.
Mm.
And just randomly plant them. They don't have to be in lines or anything.
Yep.
And then keep cutting the flowers because you can bring them indoors. They have lovely scent.
If you didn't have the bulb from the store, do they... sort of self...
Yeah, they will multiply. So every
on their own.
A few
yeah.
years you can, after they've died down, you can divide them and then plant them somewhere else. So they'll
I just wonder how
multiplying.
Nature does, did that, does it on its own. I guess just over years, eh, and yeah. without us meddling.
No.
And then you come across a beautiful sort of yeah. natural... sort of field of them in yeah. the bush somewhere or whatever.
If you go to the Auckland Botanic Gardens, you can see a lot of them under the peach
mm-hmm.
or the cherry trees. So that's a beautiful sight.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing to do right now. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
And one thing, did you know that you can actually dry these narcissus? Mm. Like you can say if you want to keep them... for a long time, you can dry them. They can be microwaved or you can dry them traditionally by hanging them upside down.
Yeah.
And they'll last. So I didn't know that, so I might try that.
I didn't
that
know that either. Side. Okay.
And one tip is when you're cutting them, put them in the vase of water. Don't put them with any other flowers at first because the sap in the leaves or the stalks will... they're a bit toxic to the other
flowers.
Oh,
yeah, okay. They are quite sappy,
so
yes.
just keep them aside for about 24 hours and then those tips will seal because when you're cutting them...
Do you put them aside in water?
In water.
And then,
and then it will seal off and then you can put all them right. with other flowers. But they're just lovely on their own anyway. So,
okay.
Yeah, so...
good to know. Thanks.
They're great cut flower.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I did not know. I mean, I didn't realise that sap was, yeah.
You don't want to eat those flowers.
I guess
flowers.
You know, no, no, not, you, no. Well, I haven't, look, I hadn't ever thought of it, but I just, in general rule of thumb, if you don't know, don't eat it.
Don't
know. Yeah. So, yeah, good advice. I reckon it would probably be the same for, like, any flower that sort of produces a lot of sap. Like that, just if you're not sure, do what you suggested and just keep them aside for a bit.
Yeah,
yeah, before you chuck it in with the crew. Okay. Yeah, because my beautiful sweet peas that I talked about last week might not appreciate it. Although it's not sweet pea, that wouldn't work.
They don't tend to flower.
Okay, that wouldn't work. But you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying. All right. So, anything else?
No, that's all for our plant of the week.
Okay. All right. So, we have a few questions regarding Albert Chan, meteorologists, meteorologist of the century.
That's my dad.
West
for those
Auckland.
That don't know.
So, I'll just quickly, did you want to talk about the June results this year?
June results?
Or is there too many numbers?
Oh.
He's very thorough, I must say.
My dad records the weather every day. So
June, at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he hadn't given me the results for June. He had given me the result for May.
Oh, was that
Sorry
for May?
About that.
Oh, I need to change that. Okay, but that's cool. I'm still interested.
But he does say July is going to be the month where you get the most frost. Where we live in Henderson. So.
Yeah, according to, he's been doing it since 1974.
Yeah.
So I had a few questions since we ran out of time last week. So yeah, all right. So next month it's going to be cold as for sure. It's always been that way since 1974, most of the time. July?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, is that all you've got for...
Yes, I'm sorry, Karen.
Okay.
We are running out of time.
Oh, okay. Look, what we'll do is we'll start the next show with the other questions. I've got some good ones for Albert.
Okay.
So we promise you guys we'll start off with that. It's quite interesting, some of his results.
Okay, keep snuggling up and look after your plants.
Okay, guys.
Happy
Don't
gardening.
Forget to cover your plants. It's a fine night. Bye.
Bye. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.